Let's get started. We have class to go to as well. How are things this week? Maybe we can start with you guys.
So, there's lots of pressure in this week, but
Can you, what is that? There's a
yeah,
lot of
lot of
pressure.
pressure in this week, but we have some
You mean
progress.
work pressure or academic pressure?
Academic
Class
pressure.
coursework?
Coursework, research,
Mostly coursework.
mostly coursework. But we have some progress. Like, I was trying to write some data into a fixed location, and then from another program, I was trying to retrieve that data.
I mean, two different processes.
Different process, yeah. I was able to do that.
How do you do that at the application level?
No. Last from two application, I called two system call,
Okay.
and in that two system call, one system call I tried to write the data into a specific location in the DRAM, and another system call, and I retrieved the data. So
And this is going through your allocator. What kind of system is just your own custom
Yeah,
system call?
I have used two system calls, NVMe open and NVMe close.
Okay.
And still I have to add more cores to my allocation. It's not complete.
Okay, that's good. That's certainly progress. Are you saying that your allocator is mostly done, or
No, just initial phase is done, but I have to track the all the pages, and I still need to add some data structure to hold the information.
about which page is used and which page
Yes,
is not and things like that?
that's
Yeah,
the
when we allocate this basic page from anywhere in the region. What if we want to get a particular page or the starting page? What we should do?
I don't think you
Mm-hmm.
mean that. I don't think you mean that. However, how do you verify that the page you're getting is a page from that memory interval that you're reserving for that?
On the physical address.
Based on the physical address?
We know the physical address of the range, and we see that there is a conversion between virtual address and physical address. The PE. We get the virtual address.
Oh. I just remember something that might save you a lot of trouble. You know that in is it device mem or prop mem? Device mem, I think it is. There you have map all the physical memory of the computer. So I think you can just write in a script that writes that to a file to verify that you're writing to the correct page and something like that.
I'm sorry, which you're saying that you can access the contents of the entire physical memory through a device file?
Yes.
Okay.
And so if you know the offset of your physical memory, the one that you reserve for a number of memory, then you can. I know you can read the content, right? Maybe you can write it too.
No, I think they'll have to do more investigation to find out what can be done with that device file if it does what you're saying it does.
You're not familiar with that one?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably it probably was added to recent kernels.
Even if it is, I mean, I don't know everything.
Right.
Is there a system map or something?
Hmm?
Are you talking about a system map?
No, the system map just gives you all the
Address.
mappings for a
Right.
specific process address space. I think what he's talking about is the entire contents of physical memory is available as a device file.
Right.
Okay.
So it's physical, not virtual.
Yes. Yes.
You may be right, and it's possible that I might have run into it before and forgot it.
Yeah, it's one of those files that you never use until you need it. So if that is the case, it might simplify substantially the dumping of the memory to a file and things like that.
Yes.
Mm. You can just write user space script to do that.
Mm. If you can, that's what you're saying, can we write to that file?
I know we can read from it.
Mm.
I don't know if we can write to it.
Mm-hmm. You, of course, have to be super user to do that. And,
right.
And writing to it can completely mess up your system if you do the wrong thing.
Yes.
So I'd be surprised if they allow it even for the super user.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you define great device driver,
mm-hmm.
the device file, then you specify the operations that you want to, that you support. So I know read is supported, and like write is supported.
No, you guys can look at it later. You can show them what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, let's go back to what you were saying earlier.
So now, now from for next part, we are trying to implement this system call sequential.
Okay, good. And how about you, Anta?
I didn't have much time to do that. I was working on the dumping of the file, the memory.
But inside the kernel.
But,
this may be easier.
Yeah, I didn't have much time to do.
And then, did you see how you can populate the physical memory?
From
inside the kernel, can you populate specific areas of physical memory?
Populating?
Populate means write. Because you have to read from file and write it.
Yes. The write is in the read and write from a physical memory to a physical memory in the example of the book. But I didn't find how to write to the device. I made a partition, but
okay.
Find the device.
How to create a block I/O request and so on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying.
You can look at some of the code in our existing repositories, right? Several of our projects create block I/O requests inside the kernel. You were probably not involved.
The caching project is
probably
who wants to.
Polar's caching project. Yeah. Okay.
I'll send you the link.
It's called vcache or not?
It had a host something. It had a weird name.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, and it's in our SVN repository.
Right?
Git repository. Okay, so do you guys know what to do next? Or you have steps lined out for what to do next week?
We have the outstanding work to do. Like, we already have this goal to release in this week. But.
Okay. All right. Leo, we need to have a meeting about your design, but maybe for the benefit of these guys, you can tell them what you've been up to. And,
right.
So then they also have. I don't want them to, to join that design meeting which we'll have on Friday, but at least they need to know at a high level what you're doing.
Right. So there's this project that we call SoftVN. What it does is it allows applications to allocate memory. Memory that is made persistent the same way that you allocate memory, volatile memory. And it has a. So complicated. So, what it allows you to do is basically you allocate memory and it makes your data sources in memory persistent without having to serialize it. And it whatever that you have in memory, it computes. There's so many consequences. I forgot what's the correct. I used to have a page to explain this, but I haven't done it so long. I forgot. But basically, what it does is transfer your data source from memory to persistent media, and from the persistent media back to memory. And it has some other convenience, like if you have an application that wants to use a library. And to do that, it's great. But if you have an existing application that already has the data structure defined and you just want to make that persistent, then it has something called a closure. Basically, the idea is... Anyway,
So by the way, do you guys know anything about? Did I send you the paper?
Yeah.
You read the paper.
Oh, great. Okay, so perfect. That's great. That's a matter of work.
So we can think about the integration with our design manager
mm-hmm.
and
software. So basically, what it does is keeps a root for
right.
each application, keeps
right.
a root and tracks the pointers.
Correct. That's
placed to the persistent.
Right. So the current version of SoftVPN, it assumes that what you have in the backend storage is the block device, and based on that assumption, it makes many optimizations to get the best possible performance out of that block device. To give you some ideas, like we write large sequential chunks, and we read large sequential chunks to get good performance. We have other optimizations that are there related to block devices. But we use the read and write interface. That's what we have to interact with block devices. What other optimizations do we have?
We have this chunk remapping thing, but I think those things are at the block level. We don't have to worry about that
right.
for these guys.
So what I'm doing is trying to make modifications to this library that exports the same interfaces of manipulating chunks, containers, but using as a backend storage no more than memory that is bi-addressable. So basically what I'm going to have to do is remove all the interface that talks to the block device and do reads and writes, and replace that with something else that interacts with either your non-volatile memory or memory allocator, or something else that provides a way to allocate persistent memory.
I remember that there was something like a chunk remapper processor and there's something called LIMA.
Right.
These are related to the block device, so you don't need these.
LIMA is probably going to stay.
Mm.
So
LIMA is not related to the block device.
No. So basically what it allows you to is it allows applications to manage memory in containers. So you allocate a container that the application doesn't have to worry about how that container is made persistent. And you allocate objects inside that container, and once you're done, you say, I want to make this persistent now. And they go through a series of steps that makes that persistent. And you keep making modifications, and you say, I want to make this persistent again, and it will create maybe the persistent, but keeping both versions. The container has a notion of versioning, so when every time you make it persistent, you keep the old versions around. And the reason why you want to do that is because if in the process of making a new persistent version you crash, you can go back to the previous version and everything is consistent. It has also the advantage that when the application can decide when to make the container persistent, which means that the application knows when is a good time to make something consistent, right? As opposed to doing it in a random or periodically, which you might store a copy that is not fully consistent from the perspective of the application. So I'm really trying to redesign that so that what I get as an allocation is, but I need to make a decision. Like, I don't know if we're going to keep around the idea of a chunk or just work at the granular page. I have some questions about my initial idea was to.
The only reason we had a chunk was because we wanted to write large pieces of data to disk. And here, that requirement goes away. So
right.
I don't immediately see the need for a chunk. And that seems more like an overhead to me than anything.
There's another reason related to the chunk.
Mm.
Is that we mempro that data regions so that can lead to the chunk. So that one might be.
Yeah, but that happened after the fact that we created a chunk to optimize I/O. And since we did that, and we only do I/O at the granularity of a chunk, it made sense for us to protect at the granularity of a chunk as well, because even if one page gets modified, we're going to write the entire chunk to disk. So why not just protect at the granularity of a chunk?
Sure.
So that was a side effect of that original optimization.
True. So what I was thinking was maybe if we keep around the chunk, we would pull away or not. It's not really that complicated because what you have to do is make the chunk equal to a page. And by design, the chunk is always a multiple of page. But I was thinking about making, if we use the number of time memory file system as a backend storage, for that is for the initial design. My idea was, I can make, since chunk is the only thing that was a fixed size, I can make every chunk of the file. And then when I have basically two memory allocators inside SoftPM. One that allocates at the kernel level, I can ask for pages. And they give me, and when I ask for pages, I specify enough information to say I want a page from a metadata chunk or from a data chunk. We have two types of chunks in SoftPM, data chunks and metadata chunks. The reason why we do that is because when we do a restore operation, we don't map everything into memory immediately. We only map a couple of things that we need. And as you try to walk through the container accessing different data structures, then we map the rest of the data into memory as needed. And I guess we really want to keep that around too.
The chunk mapping?
The loading on demand. In this case, it would be mapping on demand.
Yeah. That's right. But I'm just wondering, a couple of things you said stood out for me. One is that map every chunk to a file. I think that's, first of all, whether we need to have chunks or not is the question. And I don't see why we need chunks. Second is, even if we have chunks, mapping a chunk to a file in PMFS may not be a good idea because then we'll blow up the metadata requirement inside the PMFS.
True.
And I think that working with a page granularity is okay, given that doing anything at a smaller granularity requires a lot more effort.
Could you repeat that again?
Working at the page granularity is okay for now.
Yes.
Because working at anything smaller than the page granularity requires a lot more effort.
Right.
To track changes and things like that.
Yes.
But going larger than a page, to me, doesn't seem necessary. I don't see what is the benefit for persistent memory.
Okay.
At least I don't see it, but you should think more about this.
Okay. I don't have any problem with getting rid of the chunk concept.
Yeah, because I think that just complicates the design unnecessarily. Earlier we needed the chunk because we wanted to optimize for I/O, and we had this really interesting optimization called chunk remapping that allows us to write anywhere on disk.
Sure.
And that's only possible because we have a SID layer that keeps track of chunk remapping persistently. That goes away as well.
So then how do we make things persistent? All you have is files.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to use the idea of a file.
You have to use the idea of a file. I was thinking that every container is a file.
Every container.
Mm.
There are many questions if you do that, because right, the container grows down dynamically. Although the container does have fixed size as well. Because container is, at least in the original design, is a multiple of chunks.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a fixed size.
Yeah, but what is the problem with container growing? Because a file can grow as well.
That is true, but what was wrong with that? Oh, I could memory map for different portions of the file, right? Yeah, I could do that as well. And when you memory map different portions of the file, you can have different policies for it as well, right?
The reason I say a container, I mean, to me, naturally gets mapped to a file because a file can be copied to a different machine.
Right.
A page of a container cannot be used, or a chunk of a container cannot be used independently within another machine. You have to copy a whole bunch of stuff that are related, before you can do anything on the other machine. But if you send an entire file to the container, you can use it directly on the other machine. That sharing becomes easier or more straightforward at that granularity.
So in this case, as I said previously, we have two memory allocators. One that allocates a big number of pages, and one that is in a slab allocator for a smaller allocation. So with this design that we're drafting right now, so if the whole container is a file, then the memory allocator will be in charge, the one that allocates page will be in charge of expanding the file if needed. And then the other one keeps track of the page that it's using, and the other one is basically the slab allocator, which in the code is called the page table. The page table basically became the slab allocator.
That's surprising.
Yes, it's not needed as a page table anymore. And you need to keep metadata around indicating where your objects are and what are the size of these objects and things like that. You need to make that information persist. So the page table is very similar to an inode. That's what we have right now. We have an outer, we have a page directory, inner pages, or outer pages, inner pages, and then pointing to data. So it's, you can think of it as an inode, and that's what we're storing. And then at this level, you have metadata about the size of the allocation and things like that. And when you ask for, when you want to allocate memory in a container, an object in a container, then you query this page table, which is, let's call it slab allocator. You query the slab allocator and you walk through this metadata and you say, I already have space for this allocation, or I have to enumerate space. And then when that happens, you request the main page allocator to give you a page and you use that page. Okay, so yeah, I think it makes sense to use one file.
I think it's simpler that way for the portability reason that I told you. But then, once you send a file over, anyone who has the ability to interpret the container can directly use the file.
True, that's true. Moreover, in level, the documentation for level DB benchmarking, they use files. They store the log and other things in files, in different files. And they had a very interesting small test that they perform. Basically, you create a folder and you populate the folder with a number of files. Every file with fixed size. And then you benchmark, you measure how much time does it take to open a file as a function of the number of files that you have in the folder. And it becomes substantially slower when the number of files get big. So mapping every chunk to a file, you might take a performance hit as well.
Because of the metadata blow up, right?
Right. Of course, this test was for EXT4, but I'm assuming that you also pay a penalty in any other file system.
Okay, so let's talk more on Friday. I think it would be helpful to have Daniel as well in that discussion, because he might be able to fill in some of the gaps about soft PM.
Yes.
So find out what time works for him. For me, any time in the afternoon is okay.
Afternoon, you mean after the colloquium?
Do we have a colloquium this week?
I don't know. I'm assuming we do. We always do, right?
Yeah. Let me see. I didn't hear about one. That's why I'm not sure. 18th. What is the
18th?
18th. Yep. So we have one after that. So
okay.
3:30.
Yeah. I think the code is gonna get a lot smaller, because for instance we don't need to have multiple representations of the same data structure like we do have in SoftPM. If for instance the same data structure has an on disk representation and on memory representation and things like that. And all that goes away.
Oh yeah. That's true. Yeah, it can be simplified, but we have to be careful about how we do persistence points.
Yeah, so what I'm gonna, my goal, my initial aim for the first implementation is have a very basic memory allocation for both patient LAD and SLAP and LAD, and being able to allocate a container and objects inside the container.
Mm. Also think about how you're going to support writes to the container. Because earlier with SoftPM, you had this very nice property that you could continue writing to volatile memory without any problem. But now, if memory is persistent, every write is going to change the state of the container. Unless you are doing something more about this.
Copy and write. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, but I think we can use the same technique. We memory-thread the page, and then if you try to write to it, we create a copy of it, and then you write.
You create a copy and write. Do you allow... Okay. So that copy has to be done at the time of the first write.
Right, and we only update them. The protection at the page of one, at the granularity of one page.
Hmm.
So when the whole,
that is something we haven't done with the previous one because we didn't have to.
We have that too, because we allowed updates to the chunks while we're committing.
Right, that's true.
We
already have that infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Okay. We might just have to move some of the chunk-based infrastructure to page-based infrastructure.
Which I think it should be fairly straightforward.
Okay.
So yeah, my initial implementation is the base things, but no, I don't want to add here just yet the closure. Because that part it's complicated. So just basic allocations, and then the closure will come afterwards.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there are a bunch of optimizations there. Like for instance, when do we do a pointer at? We put those in a queue, and then we process the queue. And now if we do discovery, we don't add the pointers directly to the pointers list, but to the queue. I have no idea why we're doing that.
For optimization.
Yeah, but I don't see it. Why?
Because we wanted to minimize the discovery time. Or sorry, we wanted to minimize the something. I mean, that was a blocking operation and we wanted to do it.
You might have to allocate more metadata pages to put your persistent pointer there. And that persistent pointer might disappear by the time you actually call the flush.
So for instance, garbage collection is one example of what can be done in post-processing. You don't want to be doing garbage collection in the memory access path. Discovery happens at the time of... So what is it that you were saying was being post-processed? You were saying something else?
The pointers are when you declare, when you say give hints to the library and have a pointer here, that is deferred for later on.
Well, you mean recording that there is a pointer there is deferred?
You know, when you call a pointer, you have to check. You check whether that pointer is within the persistent region, or if it is in the register volatile allocation. Because we do have a tree of volatile allocations, and then when we find a pointer to that, we put it in the list for that allocation.
Yeah.
And.
Because the finding the allocation itself was taking time.
Yes.
And we didn't need to record the pointer and match the pointer with the allocation at the time of pointer add. We only needed it at discovery time.
Yes.
So.
But in the flush operation, you at very high level, what you do is you walk through the list of persistent pointers, and if it's pointing to something that is persistent, you're good to go. There's nothing else to do. If it's pointing to something that is volatile, then you move that allocation to your persistent area, and you fix the pointers, so the back pointers to the persistent area, and whatever pointers you have in that memory allocation, you follow again.
Yeah.
Those pointers that you're following, they are now in persistent memory.
Mm.
You don't in that at that moment, you don't add them to the list of persistent pointers. You're adding them to the queue.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Because at the end, once
no, that's the queue of persistent pointers. No?
But the queue is volatile, it's not persistent.
No, volatile as well as persistent.
It's just volatile. The persistent pointers are stored in a list of persistent pointers that is persistent. But why are we doing that? I guess it's because the queue is in memory, so all you have to do is allocate a little bit of memory and put in the queue. And then once you're done, you're doing all the discovery, then you start processing the queue. And there is when you add it to the persistent.
That doesn't sound right to me. Something is wrong about that. Maybe I'm not understanding it correctly.
So you have a list, right? From the container, you have a list of pages.
Hmm.
And these are persistent pointers.
Yeah.
And you have here both Lima addresses.
Hmm.
And
well, let's discuss this on Friday. But these guys are probably not required for that discussion. Hmm? But we'll talk about it on Friday, and maybe you can figure out a time when both you and Daniel are available. Ideally, before 6 p.m. if possible.
Sure. Yes.
So. All right, so let's meet next week.
Yeah?
Well, we'll meet in class.
Yeah.
Let's meet for the project. Okay?
Okay.